You're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for The Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, California. And the Doctor's Inn is on the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening. And on this show, I like to bring up subjects that are of health and medical realm. And hopefully they are subjects that I think you, the listener, would be interested in. If you have any subjects that you'd like me to have on the show, please don't hesitate to email me. And here's my email address, klogan, so K-L-O-G-A-N, M-D, at yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more, if that wasn't enough, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Chico Natural Foods, the co-op has recently added a hot food and salad bar, open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, Chico community-owned grocery store, has been providing local, organic, and sustainably produced food for more than 40 years. Have you seen the co-op lately? All right. So today's show, as a guest, I have Aaron Haley here in Chico. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
And what I'm going to, I'm going to give you a little introduction as to what Aaron Haley has been up to over the last few years. She is a board-certified music therapist. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a minor in music from California State University, Chico. She has a master's degree in music therapy from the University of the Pacific, which is in Stockton, California. She completed training in neurologic music therapy at Fort Collins, Colorado. And prior to college, she earned a Musical Theater Conservatory Certificate of Completion from the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York City. That's a little town east of here. She has worked as a music therapist and program director of a daycare program for adults with developmental disabilities in Los Angeles for 2 years. She opened up her own practice of music therapy here in Chico in 2014. She started a nonprofit grant through North Valley Community Foundation called the Music Therapy Impact Fund, which provides music therapy to hospice and palliative care patients. Wow, Aaron. That tired me out. How accomplished you are in this subject, music therapy, and what a great subject. And we want to hear about it.
Well, thank you.
What is it? Music therapy. Tell us.
Well, the simplest definition is that music therapists use evidence-based music techniques to help individuals achieve non-musical goals. So I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception that we are some type of music teacher. We do music instruction, which we can do if that is a way to reach a goal with a client, or helps with the goals that we're already doing or keeps them motivated, but it's not technically what we do. So for example, I'll give you some examples. With individuals with autism, we might need to be working on social skills, eye contact, taking turns, having some patience, emotion regulation, that sort of thing. So we might use a song we might sing a song together that incorporates some of those things, like making sure that there's eye contact when we're saying hello, how to say hello, how to respond when somebody says hello. So there's structure within the music, both musically, that provides some support for them, and then within the words of a song that gives them direction on how to have some appropriate social engagement with their peers. So therefore, the mode of what we're doing is through music, but the goal is actually a social skill.
Social skills goal.
Mm-hmm.
But music being a way of connecting with that client with autism, I mean, in a way that just simple words, and someone's trying to talk to them, be it parent, doctor, other therapist, whatever, but music.
Right. And
connecting with them.
Yeah. And that's one of the beautiful things about using music therapy, is because music is supportive and engaging without asking anything in return, and without even always knowing the underlying reasons why a particular song or a particular instrument might appeal to an individual. And yet that's what connects with them, and that's what they're drawn to, and that's how we can get them engaged in a therapeutic process.
What a beautiful thing, but what a human beautiful thing that is. Tell us, you know, so that's kind of the general idea of music therapy. Give us some ideas of what populations, what clients might you work with?
Okay. Well, autism is a big population for music therapy just across the board, because as you said, we can a lot of times connect with these individuals in a different way. But also, Alzheimer's is another. The elderly, people with memory issues, and Alzheimer's is a big population that we serve. There are music therapists serving in the prison systems. So working primarily, I think, in the prison systems, it's primarily with like psychiatric care. But then also in other facilities that are helping with psychiatric care. So, and then there's also like kind of like the neurologic music therapy side of it, which is addressing needs of the people who have had stroke or traumatic brain injury or have been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and really tapping into the rhythm and motor and language for people recovering from those instances. And then just general developmental disabilities is also, it's a broad category, but that's another population that that we can work with. Really, we can work with anybody. You know, there's no limit. But those are some of the top ones: Alzheimer's and autism, and traumatic brain injury. And then also, when you mentioned the hospice and palliative care, and so medical music therapy is actually kind of how I got into it. Was getting interested in medical music therapy and working with patients that are terminal or in the hospital. They didn't necessarily weren't terminal, but in the hospital for long term, and working on pain management, relaxation, decreasing the need for pain for medications like pain
Absolutely.
Meds, anxiety medication, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, and then, you know, prepping for surgery. So mm-hmm. doing some work prior to surgery, getting them used to a certain type of music, mm-hmm. Using that music right before the surgery, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So, and especially for little kids too, it's really helpful. So not only do we have working on the emotional part of being in the hospital and in being sick, but then there's also, we can continue working on where they are developmentally. So they're missing school, right? They're away from their friends. We can also address those things as well through music.
You know, I think, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show, and I think about the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I think about the kind of the environment of the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and you just brought up a point about children mm-hmm. in the hospital. Think about it: if you were a child and you're in a hospital bed, and all this stuff around you, and people, and number one, you're ill. And there's mm-hmm. something's happening too, you're going to have surgery or whatever. It just makes sense to me that music right. therapy, music would be an absolute useful tool mm-hmm. in their well-being and their care.
It normalizes the situation.
Yeah.
It brings something that they're familiar with,
yeah.
they know, they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
It can create, like I said, an outlet, or it can create an opportunity to continue with where they are in their academics, but it can create an opportunity for them to interact with their families, mm-hmm. which, I mean, when you're in the hospital and you've got mm-hmm. a kid in the hospital, you're stressed, right? No matter
yeah.
what, you
right.
just can't help it. And so
the parents are stressed.
The parent, that's what it, yeah, the parents are stressed. The music, that can be a group thing where the family's all doing it together. Yeah, it's fantastic. And it doesn't seem like therapy.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
And you know, it makes me think again, you know, with children in the hospital, especially, you know, if a child's in the hospital, it depends on what the problem is, but they may be back at the hospital. I'm thinking mm-hmm. about some of the kids that in my practice over the years that have had to be in the hospital, and it wasn't going to be a one-time thing.
Right.
And yeah. think about the from the point of view of the kid, with the coldness of the hospital and the, like you were saying mm-hmm. earlier, you know, the doctors come in and they got things that they want you to have to do, and that's mm-hmm. a negative thing really for mm-hmm. the kid. And the nurses come in, they want you to do this, that, or they got to give you a shot or put in an IV or all this negative stuff. Well, gosh, mm-hmm. Having a person come in to be a totally unaggressive, but very kid-oriented,
yeah.
sharing
it's
solely
with the for that person,
yeah.
that patient. And again, like you were mentioning, going back for multiple times, if you have to go mm-hmm. to the hospital, and it's the same therapist, the same music therapist.
Great. Good connection.
It's and it makes it sometimes can make coming to the hospital fun. When I was in my
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was in my internship in Arizona, there was a child who had this diagnosis that required him to come back again mm-hmm. and again. This was actually prior to I met him, but it was prior to my being there. And mm-hmm. my internship director had been working with him for years.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, I met him. He was so excited to see her. They came in and visited her just because they wanted to. When it was Christmas time, they did this whole 12 days of Christmas scavenger hunt mm-hmm. for us that ended up being from them, because they had such a wonderful experience at that hospital. And really, that's what we need in a hospital setting. It should be, you know, it should be about the experience.
Oh, yeah.
And the music therapy can make that experience so much more positive.
So warm and friendly and,
mm-hmm.
and positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the healing, you know, the healing process, you know, the stress of any stress,
mm-hmm.
It really does affect our healing ability, both mental right. and physical. And so
right.
that's a tool.
Yeah.
Music therapy can be a tool.
It is a huge tool. And there's things that you can learn. You know, we can work on relaxation techniques. We can work on decreasing anxiety, that sort of thing. In the hospital, you can take that home with you.
Yeah.
And you do it at home.
See, now those things are going a step beyond just simple music. You're,
mm-hmm.
you're with some of your training. Especially this neurologic
mm-hmm.
music therapy related, you know, helping them with relaxation, et cetera,
right.
Beyond just the simple interaction of music.
Right. So they're successful
wow.
in
Great.
The moment, and then they get to take it home
yeah.
and continue it. And it, you know, you're talking about the families. There was a girl that I saw in the hospital who was a teenager, and she had a traumatic brain injury. And I went in to see her, and her mom was there, and she just was the mom was just so stressed out because they didn't know what was going to be what was going to happen. They didn't know what the prognosis really was. It was really early. And I asked if I could come in and do relaxation. And she was like, well, I don't know. You know, you can, but I don't know if it's going to do anything, you know, whatever. And I said, okay, well, I'll just try. We'll see what happens. And I started playing music. I had my guitar and I was at her bedside and she was in her bed. And she had a friend there who started massaging her head, the patient, started massaging the patient's head. And I honestly just played a couple of songs with her, peaceful, calming songs. I reminded her that she was safe and she could relax and take deep breaths and that sort of thing. And when I was done, the mom had fallen asleep. So she got to rest. And
which was a major step.
Major step, because she'd been in such a high stress mode for so long that she... It's like we weren't doing it for the mom specifically, but the mom got something out of it and then is therefore able to care for the daughter. And the daughter actually relaxed. The patient relaxed too. Mm-hmm. And she fell asleep too. But what was most striking about that was the mom felt like they were safe. Mm-hmm. In that moment, for that time being, I was holding her daughter in the music and she was safe. Mm-hmm. And the mom could breathe and take a nap.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was great.
Very soothing and safe. You know, and we were we were talking about this before the show, but, in hearing this, as a doctor as a patient, potential patient, I'm just thinking, how could we have a hospital and not have music therapy in it? It's just, what a missing jewel of helping our patients and helping all of us. Staff included.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, in music therapy as a profession is still relatively new. And I mean, it is everywhere. It's all over California. It's all over the country. It's all over the world. But it hasn't really been available here before. So now it is. So it's not only... I love that you said that it's this jewel that we need to kind of add to the many jewels that we have in here in Chico, but it wasn't readily available before, and now it is.
Excellent.
So.
Hey, before we go any further, I want to say I want you to talk about accessing you. Any listener could access you, and then we'll repeat this later on in the show.
Absolutely. So you can go to my website, which is www.themusicinitiative.net. I do have a Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/musicinitiative.
So Music Initiative is
my business
theme. That's the name of your business.
Yeah.
So the website is themusicinitiative.net.
yes.
And then Facebook is Music Initiative. That's easy enough to do.
Yeah, good. And actually, I'll give you my email, which is easy. It's Erin, E-R-I-N, @themusicinitiative.net. So you can email me.
Say that again?
Yeah, Erin @themusicinitiative.net. It's E-R-I-N.
So say it again, please.
Erin, E-R-I-N, @themusicinitiative.net.
Man, I tell you, I hope you listeners are paying attention to this, because this is something that I think we should take advantage of this young lady. I just have a thought. We were talking a few minutes ago about hospital, how music therapy fits into hospital treatment and care for patients, and some of your experience has been in that prior. But then, what about situations? So let's say, for instance, I have an elderly parent who's in, let's say my elderly parent or parents are in their home. They're getting old and they're not interacting with people in the community much, and I'm trying to help them in various ways. That's one option, one area. And then another one I'm thinking of is, what about a parent or a loved one in a care facility, such as one of the care facilities, either assisted care or not assisted care, or convalescent hospitals. Some of the where they really do need nursing care long-term, mm-hmm. Placement for that. Could music therapy, could an individual in the community, say one of their relatives, would you be able to help them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's, you are available mm-hmm. as a music therapist mm-hmm. To assist in the care of those patients mm-hmm. and make their life better.
Yeah, quality of life is big.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you, I know. So how could they get in touch with you again?
Well, through my website at themusicinitiative.net, or you can email me at Erin, E-R-I-N, at themusicinitiative.net.
Great. And if and we're going to give that later on in the show again too. All right. And now, I know there's other things to talk about this, but while we're on the how people in the community could use your services mm-hmm. and get in touch with you for those services for their children with autism, to help with their parents who are getting elderly, to help with their loved one that is in the hospital, mm-hmm. or to help with their loved one at home who's recovering from a long illness of some sort, or to help with their children who are acting out in school or something. You know,
right.
So you need another
behavior management.
You need another avenue of approach because mm-hmm. the other approaches aren't working so well. Any people who would be reaching out to you for help in those arenas, funds, talk to me about funds.
How's
issue.
It paid for?
We're going to
blunt, Dr. Logan. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very relevant.
Money.
It's a very relevant question, and
sure.
It's important for sure, and especially for a lot of the people that you mentioned. They're going to have bills and things that they have to pay for already. That are going to, you know, it's the budget is a really important thing.
Right.
Mostly, it's out of pocket right now. I can bill insurance, but it gets a little tricky, especially if there's other therapies involved, especially like speech or PT, because we can't double bill. So if you're getting speech therapy, you know, twice a week, I have to make sure to see you on a different day.
Oh, yeah,
Because they're getting a little technical here. Insurance codes are non-profession specific, which means that a speech therapist could use the same code as a music therapist. A music therapist could use the same code as an OT. They're not owned, so to speak,
right.
by those professions.
Right.
So there's a lot of crossover
for
insurance codes. But that can get worked out, and it's really a case-by-case basis. It mm-hmm. depends on the plan that you have. It depends mm-hmm. on the insurance company that you have. There's all of these mm-hmm. Elements that kind of go into the mm-hmm. insurance nightmare.
Nightmare's a good word.
But we can try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if they say no, we can try again. And usually there needs to be a prescription from a doctor
yeah.
saying that they're prescribing music therapy, and we have to have a letter of medical necessity saying exactly what we're going to be working on and why music therapy is the way to go with it. So
and what the goals
and
are.
And what the goals are yeah. and the time frame for the goals.
Yeah.
So it does get very clinical, especially when insurance is involved, because they really need to see that data. The goals set out specifically why music therapy is the one to address it, and
those goals are out there. That all could be put together.
That can all be put together. Absolutely.
Way for the insurance companies to understand.
Absolutely. So it's just taking the time to ask the doctor. Usually doctors are fine. They will give a prescription. It's no problem. So you get a prescription from your doctor and fill out the form. And with my clients, I do an assessment at the beginning. So we kind of figure out what goals the family is looking
yeah.
for, the individual
sure.
is looking for, plus an assessment that I have that we kind of can build mm-hmm. goals off of. And so it really honestly depends.
Yeah.
We can try and try again.
Yeah, and you know, when we were saying that, you know, you were talking earlier before the show about this, and maybe during the show, about the music therapy being relatively, it's an old time
mm-hmm.
centuries approach,
mm-hmm.
literally centuries.
Yes. Yeah.
However, as far as being a clinical approach that we acknowledge,
mm-hmm.
it's relatively new in
yeah.
our area. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. And it's growing, and it's getting more and more. There's more and more research out there. So you know, when we mm-hmm. think about the scientific community or the medical community, you know, there people are so focused on, you know, quantitative data.
Right.
You have to have the numbers, you have to have the results, all these things, which is, you know, I mean, it is true. But music is so subjective, and we're just now really starting to kind of understand. We're learning about the brain all the time, and the underlying processes of processing music and emotionally relating to music, emotionally responding to music, and all of these things that the technology is allowing us to get more and more answers and more clarity on why that why there is music is so important. But because we just don't have all the answers all the time, the qualitative part is also really, really important. And that's like, that's the emotional part, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have this very strong quantitative data that's out there and really strong qualitative data that's out there. And the people that want music therapy and are searching for it and see results from it, sometimes it's very specific and numbers oriented, and other times they're just like, it just made a huge difference.
Right.
And I can't tell you what, but it did.
Can't define it so well and measure it.
Right. And I'll kind of give you an example is there's a study that came out recently that was talking about the emotion regulation centers of the brain and how they are activated when an individual is playing preferred, this is going to sound interesting, but preferred improvisation. So an instrument that is preferred. So it might be a drum or a piano, but there's some sort of instrument or sound that is preferred by that person. And when they're actively engaging in improvisation with that instrument or multiple instruments, there's three areas of the brain that are activated that are associated with emotion regulation. And that seems to have a correlation with increasing emotional regulation in individuals that, like maybe with autism, that have a little bit of a harder time regulating some of these feelings that they're having, don't necessarily understand why they're having them. We definitely don't understand why they're having them, but they're there, and giving them this opportunity, which it's, you know, a structured, unstructured intervention. You know, there's some structure there, but it's improvisation, so anything can happen. And when those areas are activated, it's just getting the reinforcement to the brain that you have control, and you're in control, and this emotion regulation is kind of activated and
help support that and empower that.
So,
you know, and I'm thinking, you know, and those studies that you mentioned and the clinical benefits and emotional benefits, et cetera, and the insurance companies and the payment, and I'm thinking, and this being relatively new, the and working with an insurance company is not fun, but the more we do that now, it's going to build, and it's going to be it'll just make it be more recognized as clinically important.
Absolutely.
The more we pursue it and do it.
Absolutely. The more the insurance companies are inundated with requests for it and pushing and pushing and pushing and not taking no for an answer, the better. And as a parallel, same thing with Chico.
Yes, exactly. Totally.
Because in Chico, like I said earlier, it wasn't available here. And so we weren't really pushing to have it because it wasn't here and it wasn't really in our consciousness. Now, it's here, and more can come. You know, it doesn't have to just be me. I just happen to be the one here right now. So to get it into the academic system, to get it into the school district, to get it into the hospital, to get it into the Veterans Administration up here, to get it into at-risk youth, to get it available for...
That's another one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that I'm interested in, to get it into... working with foster kids, which I think would be amazing. I would love to work with foster kids and bring music to them.
Hey, can we take a break?
Sure.
And all those things, those areas that you just brought up, can you talk a little bit more about those in a minute?
I can.
Shall we take a little music break, Ray? All right. Thank you. This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. Today we're talking with Aaron Haley, a certified music therapist, and learning some wonderful information about what music therapy is and the availability now in Chico through Aaron Haley, whose contact information, again, is for anybody interested in acquiring musical therapy for their loved one at home or in the hospital or in a skilled nursing facility or wherever. How could a listener contact you, Aaron?
Through my website, which is themusicinitiative.net, or you can email me directly at Aaron, E-R-I-N, at themusicinitiative.net.
Aaron at themusicinitiative.net.
Yes.
All right. I'll probably say that again before we close the show, because I want people to be able to get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
And also on the show today, we have Dr. Sophie Redlin from... Where are you from, Sophie?
So I'm from the UK.
So Britain, Britain, UK, Britain. England, we say all sorts of things
for
your country. I suppose they say United States and America or various things for our country, huh?
Yeah.
We will be, Dr. Redlin, Sophie, shall I call you Sophie or Dr. Redlin?
Sophie's fine.
Sophie. Okay, so I'm Ken. No Dr. Logan stuff. So we're kind of going to make a discussion about this subject of music therapy, and then later we're going to hear from Sophie, Dr. Redlin, about a project she's doing and why she's in the United States currently and going to be other areas of the world. So we want to hear about that in a few minutes, Sophie. So, and please join in any interaction you want. So, Aaron Haley, certified music therapist here in Chico. Excellent. The points about the place that music therapy can fill relative to helping with the well-being and the development and improvement in social interactions, etc., with all sorts of clients, patients, be they young people with autism, autism or other neurologic conditions, mm-hmm. be it patients who are demented in a care home or at home, et cetera, people who are recovering from other illnesses, et cetera. The list goes on and on and on.
On and on, yes. Unlimited.
Tell us when we took a right before the break, some of the populations that can benefit from music therapy. Tell us again what you were.
Well, we were talking about different populations or ways to get where we want music therapy in Chico specifically. And in my mind, it's getting it into the school district and getting it into the hospital and working with the veterans and working with at-risk youth and foster kids. And I mean, there's. Yeah. So, I just want to work with everybody, so to me it's like there's
no... into the school district. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, in certain school districts, if music therapy is an authorized therapy, then individuals, kids that have IEPs, which are individualized education plans, that are set through the school. In school, music therapy can be on their IEP, in which case the school district provides therapy while the children are at school. It's not yet here in Chico.
Music is not here
it's
yet
not here
as
in
part
the school
of an
district. Right.
IEP. IEP.
Mm-hmm. So it's not at this moment something that's offered through the school district or through the Butte County Office of Education. again, it hasn't been here, so it hasn't been an option up until now. Mm-hmm. But I know as close as Sacramento, there are school districts in Sacramento that have music therapy.
Sacramento. Mm-hmm. That's not far away.
No, it's not far away. It's, you know, a little bit down the road here. Mm-hmm. So getting into the school system, I think, would be a really great step for us because it really is helpful socially, emotionally, academically for a lot of these kids. Mm-hmm. And it just makes a huge difference. And I actually do see a child who is a private client, but I go and see her at school, and the school's wonderful. They let me, you know, they keep a little space, a time aside for us to go, and I go get her out of class every week, and we go do music therapy, and she's working, she's so great. I've been working with her for 2 years, and she has come out of her shell so much, and her engagement, her grandmother told me that before she started music therapy, and just as an aside, she's highly motivated by music. This kid loves music. It's the one thing that like helped her emotionally regulate all the time. She's nonverbal. And her grandmother once told me that before music therapy, she would engage about 25% of the time and disengage about 75% of the time. And after a year of therapy, that was opposite. She engaged 75% of the time. I don't even know actually now how much she disengages, to be honest with you. And her ability to emotionally regulate has increased so much.
How old is she?
She is seven.
Seven.
Seven. And she...
Is she more verbally interactive now?
No, she's not. She vocalizes, but she doesn't use language at this point. But she makes eye contact now. She didn't used to make eye contact very much. She uses her arms to make choices, to reach out and press buttons. She's communicating differently. She's engaging differently. She is able to go to a restaurant with her family. Whereas before she wouldn't. She would have, it would be too overstimulating for her, and she couldn't handle it. Now she's laughing and smiling and likes to be out in the world, which then assists her in achieving some of these academic goals. And it's just amazing. So getting into the school system, I think, would be amazing for us as Chico to say that we have this and that we offer this to our kids, and we want to give them every single opportunity we can for success and achievement and interaction and growth and development would just be
cutting edge and positive and
fantastic. Yeah. I don't see how we couldn't.
Yeah, you should have it already.
Well, and it's a process, and I understand that too. Yeah. So, I mean, nothing against the school district as it is or anything like that. But I just, you know, it's not just the school district. It's not yet in the hospital.
Yeah.
It's not yet a lot of places. But in my opinion, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
It's coming. It will continue to come. It will continue to be requested and requested and requested. And
how could it not be?
How can it not be?
Mm-mm. Hey, you know another area that you were talking about that you mentioned that I think would be it's just kind of a no-brainer, that I just think it would have great potential for helping stabilize children's social skills and interaction and calming and get them more interactive appropriately with adults and other kids is and not fall into other avenues of participation in bad stuff, and that would be kids that are the at-risk youth, mm-hmm. you mentioned, and then foster
mm-hmm.
children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I haven't worked with those populations extensively, but I think, like you said, it would be a really great option
tool.
For them, a really great tool. I did do a little bit of work when I was doing my internship in Arizona with some kids that were in it was a rehab facility, and we were a little bit limited in what we could do in that particular facility. However, we did a lot of lyric analysis with them and lyric insertion, so taking a song that they knew that was popular mm-hmm. and talking about what it meant and how it applied, and then maybe taking that song and rewriting it to make it personal for them. And there were some really great
How old were these kids?
Teenagers.
Oh.
Young teen. They were 14-ish. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be an amazing avenue for success for a lot mm-hmm. of these kids that maybe don't feel successful mm-hmm. or don't feel that they have the tools or don't feel that they could be good or successful. And I'm generalizing here, but have some behavior issues or maybe have some emotional issues that need to be addressed. Music's a great way to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's already something that is enjoyed
right.
by them. So
yeah.
by most people.
It's accepted, and it's not mm-hmm. a foreign thing that they have to worry about.
Right.
The
and
consequences
right.
of or whatever.
Right.
Like medicine is.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Hey, Sophie, Dr. Redlin, have you had any experience with music therapy have you fallen across any of this in your practice or studies?
Yeah, well, I do know of music therapists in the hospitals that I've worked in before.
In England?
In England.
You guys are so progressive.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. But they're few and far between, and I think they're really valuable, and we don't, like you're saying, we don't really acknowledge, as much as they do. Similarly with art therapists.
Mm.
And
yeah. Good mention.
Yeah. I did actually work in a very nice hospital once that put on a lunchtime concert once a week. But again, similarly to what you were saying before, it was very much for people in the foyer, to enjoy the entertainment rather than actually going to the bedside mm-hmm. and
mm-hmm. individualizing it to a patient.
Individualizing it, yeah. yeah. I've seen it a few times on the wards, but not a huge amount. But I think I was sort of telling a story earlier on about how I've experienced myself how music's really affected patients. So we had an elderly gentleman on a ward when I started working with him, kept thinking, I know his face, where do I know him from? And it turned out that he had for many years played the piano in the foyer of the hospital that I was based at. He'd come into hospital sadly with quite severe dementia and wasn't eating and was just sort of wasting mm-hmm. away really, and no one really knew what to do with him. Mm-hmm. It was very sad. He talked about music a lot with me when I would see him on the ward round, to the point where, I would spend probably too long in that. I had lots of other things to do, but I couldn't help it. I like the piano myself, so I like talking about it. But anyway, I kept saying to my colleagues, we should just get him down to the piano, one last time, while he's still able to get down. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as is often the case, it was logistically quite difficult. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't any staff to come with us, and there wasn't the right wheelchair. And eventually, actually, we managed to get a few of us to take him down. And we then couldn't find the key for the piano. So we then went on this U-turn. And really, the end of the story is that he did eventually play. And it was just amazing. I mean, he lit up, and a man who'd been crumpled over in bed for weeks, his fingers just came alive, and it really was an incredible moment, I think, for all of us. And he left the hospital a few weeks after that to go to a care home, but I'd like to think that meant a lot to him, actually.
Yeah, it was a piece of an awakening
mm-hmm.
of something.
Yeah.
Some part of his brain was revisited and stimulated, and he to a degree joined life again.
He did, yeah.
Well, and I want to say, too, that, you know, I was mentioning earlier about the qualitative versus the quantitative research that we require, and that, to me, that's such a quality of life story.
Yes.
You know, this was something that was so important to him, and kudos to you as a healthcare professional to recognize it and make that happen for him, because that clearly was important. And just a beautiful moment, and you got to see it and be a part of it, and he got to have that chance to. We were talking earlier about having this experience of healthcare, and part of his experience being in that hospital was beautiful.
Yeah.
Even if it was just a moment, it was this beautiful breath of fresh air that he got to do, to experience.
And I just had this flash that, you know, he was kind of other patients are kind of at our, as healthcare professionals, at our mercy relative to what they are able or we allow or support for their interaction, for them to interact, ways for them to interact and experience, etc.
Yeah.
So to not allow music to be part of that life is really unfortunate. And so it's our what I'm getting at is it's our doctor responsibility to have music as part of their therapy and treatment and life as much as we can in the hospital and in other avenues of therapy, such as home or care homes or whatever.
I don't even think that it's not allowed. I think it's that we don't put enough priority on giving people good quality of life when they're in hospital and at home. But and especially in care of the dying, which I think is why hospices are so great.
Yeah.
But actually, a lot of regular hospitals, you know, we just don't do death very well, and that we don't put priority on things like music and
which
even
are quality things,
which are important.
We sure like to decide what medicine to give them.
We love to do that. Yeah.
So we can do it all, though. We can do more, though. We can.
I think so.
Broaden.
Yeah,
quality issues like music.
I want to make sure to leave Sophie enough time to talk about her project, but if it's okay, I want to actually kind of segue from what you said about hospice. When I came back to Chico, one of my main goals was to get music therapy available for hospice and palliative care, because I think, like you said, Sophie, it's so important. It's so important for quality of life. And, you know, I've gotten some really great response from the heart. You know, people are like, oh, this is wonderful. Great. How are we going to pay for it? I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you other than, you know, make it a priority. But to that end, I decided that I wanted to kind of start this community-initiated fund grant for hospice and palliative care patients. So I started a fund at the North Valley Community Foundation called the Music Therapy Impact Grant. And the first goal was to raise money so that I could provide music therapy services for anybody that's receiving hospice or palliative care, free of charge to them, that would be reimbursed through the fund. And my goal with this, my evil plan, is that, you know, for a few years, I'll fundraise and raise money for it. And in that time, collect data from the patients, you know, pain scales, relaxation scales, anxiety scales, subjective responses from the patients and the families to show how this is helping. Is it helping with patient satisfaction scores, which is really important in for hospital reimbursement, that sort of thing. But to collect some data and provide this for a few years, that was something that is embraced by the community, saying, yes, we want to have this as part of our community, so we're going to support it. Do this for a few years, get the services out there. And then once that's done, hopefully have the hospice facilities or the hospitals roll music therapist into their budget, because I don't think it's something that needs to be fundraised for. I think it needs to be a standard of care.
Right.
I think it needs
to be
available immediately for anybody that wants it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an opportunity to kind of show that A, I'm serious, B, the community wants it, C, the responses from all the people, the staff, the patients, the families, the friends that are receiving this or witnessing it, and saying that we can't afford to not have it.
Yeah.
This
is something we need to do.
Yes. And I'm happy to say that the Music Therapy Impact Fund has gotten the hospice and palliative care music therapy off the ground. I'm starting to see patients. I'm getting referrals from Butte Home Health and Hospice, from Enloe Hospice, and I'm also going to the hospice house in Feather River at Feather up in Paradise. And it's free of charge to anybody that's on hospice can get this, and all they have to do is go to the website at North Valley Community Foundation.org/ this is a long one, music-therapy-impact-grant, and all I need is a name and a phone number and who's providing the hospice, and then that information gets to me and I contact you to set up a time to come and see you, home or hospital, wherever, and you can have music therapy. So I'm going to shoot the conversation back over to Sophie. But
Sophie Redland, Dr. Sophie Redland from Britain here in Chico, California. What brings you here? What are you doing? Tell us all about it.
Well,
in 7 minutes or
no,
less.
No, it's totally fine. I've got a terrible habit of blabbering on, but I'll try not. So thank you for having me. I'm a doctor from Britain, as I've said. I'm just a little tiny little bit about me. I'm training in family medicine. We call it general practice in Britain, but it's the same thing, pretty much, I think.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a qualified MD, and I'm currently doing my specialty training.
Mm-hmm.
As part of our training, we have the opportunity to do a year out, which is called a sort of fellowship year in global health. And people do a variety of different things. So some people might choose to work in a developing country or something.
See,
like that.
I told you, you guys over there in England, you're just more, you're ahead of us in so many ways. And there's another example.
Yeah. It is a great opportunity, and I jumped at it.
So you're in residency training for general medicine, family practice general medicine, and you're taking a year out to do a fellowship in something global oriented,
exactly.
Et cetera.
So I wanted to do something research based, and my particular interest was, I was working in primary care at the time, and I became very interested in, well, the background really is that I was getting a number of patients coming to see me with psychosocial problems and emotional distress, mild mental health issues, which we all know is a rising problem, but it was becoming really, really apparent to me, and I was struggling within the time I had and the resources we had to know how to deal with these patients. And it got me thinking a lot about how we're taught in the UK to consult with patients in terms of our communication. And it also got me thinking about how we manage mental health in a wider, you know, the bigger picture. And how, in many ways, I don't think we do it that well in the UK, mainly because the money isn't there, etc. And so it got me thinking about how that might be different around the world, where, you know, communities are very different, health systems are different, and levels of mental health issues are different. So this idea kind of developed and grew. I wanted it to be a qualitative study, which kind of links to what we were saying about, what I really wanted to do was go and hear some patient stories about what life is like for them living in their community. What is it about the structure of their community that might affect why they reach out to their doctor? And then when they do reach out, perhaps with a mental health problem or whatever, what resources there are in place to support them in that. I wanted to visit countries that were developed in that they had primary care in place so that I could compare that, but I wanted to try and find communities that were very contrasting to London, which is where I currently work. So I'm from a big urban centre where it's a very transient population. The actual area I work in is very affluent, but there's not a great sense of community. You know, no one really knows their neighbours in general. That's a generalisation. And so my first stop was a small Scottish island. I wanted to find the most different community within the UK that I could find. And then I've come to the States primarily because of, obviously, the very different health system in terms of it being private here. And I wanted to look at things like, you know, how appointment times compared, how it being sort of more profit-driven made a difference, and look at things like, you know, what were the common presentations and what support people were getting. I'm going on to Norway and Japan next year.
Oh, Norway and Japan?
Yeah,
Wow.
So far it's been fantastic experience for me, but it's also been incredibly enlightening in terms of the research. I've just heard so much and learned so much already.
And then you're going to put this together in a presentation in a what?
Yes, I'm hoping to do a report at the end of it. And I've got links with sort of global networks of GPs from Britain who are quite keen for me to maybe present at some of the conferences in the next year or so. I'm also filming a lot of it as I go along, and hoping to put something together in a film that might be able to be used for education or even more, who knows. But it's incredibly powerful catching people's stories on film, and I'm honored and privileged to hear them.
Well, I hope you realize that we in this community are looking forward to reading and or seeing your project when it's completed.
Absolutely. I'd love to. I'll definitely come back and
It'll be great to have a presentation, maybe. Well, we can talk about where to present it, though.
That'd be fantastic. Places. Yeah. Thank you.
Wow. So, Erin Haley.
Yes.
Music therapist, certified music therapist. Again, to contact you,
my website is themusicinitiative.net.
Themusicinitiative.net.
Mm-hmm. Or you can email me at erin@themusicinitiative.net. And I am on Facebook, so you can check me out there. And you can also find more information about the hospice and palliative care music therapy at NorthValleyCommunityFoundation.org. Just search music therapy and it'll pop right up.
Great. And Dr. Sophie Redlin from England, UK, Britain, all those places. And your study of health processes as you mentioned, in different countries of the world.
Yeah.
And we look forward to seeing your work when you're finished. Thanks for being on the show, both
of
you.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to Ray Lager, the engineer running these controls for the show. Thanks, Ray. Let's see. Underwriters, The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high-tech auto body shop specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. At Knockout Collision, estimates are always free and can usually be done while you wait, and they will even handle all the insurance paperwork. Gosh, you never hear that in my business. For an appointment or information, call Knockout Collision Repair at 899-9202 or visit knockoutcollisionrepair. That's knockoutcollisionrepair.com. And by CSU Chico Continuing Education's Open University. Open University provides an opportunity for individuals to take Chico State classes on a space available basis without going through the admissions process. More information about Open University is available by calling CSU Chico Continuing Education at 898-6105 or by visiting rce.csuchico.edu. And you probably know that the opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Hey, see you in 1 month, the third Thursday of the month, 6 to 7 in the evening, for the Doctor's Inn. Stay tuned for Beatle Nation.
To be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, Lord, or prescriptions to be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
All in my baby's arms. A good.